Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen Show on Cairo Radio. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rook, your other chef in the house.
And I'm Katie O.
And you are Katie O. I'm chef owner of several of Seattle's fine restaurants and co-host of this lovely show that's been going on for 16 years. It's good to have you here. We're at the Hot Stove Society. I'm chef owner of the Hot Stove Society. And we have several fine dining restaurants here in downtown Seattle. And, Chef, I know you have a lovely Lule just down the street, a few blocks.
Just down the street at the bottom of the Sheraton, 6th and Union. And we also have Luke in Madison Valley at 28 and Madison, on the right at the bottom of the valley there on the left, on the east side of the, or north side of the street.
There you go.
That's right. And I'm Katie O, and I work for Molly Moons. I'm the marketing director for that fine company, headquarters on Capitol Hill, selling all those ice cream dreams.
I would like our whole radio team to turn around and face the audience. It is a live audience. You know, $15 can get you a lot of activity. And give them a hand for braving Carmageddon. Yay! Yay! We have a full house here this morning.
I'm sorry, it's car almost getting.
Or via gloom. That's what I call it, via gloom.
It is a little bit more gloomy than doomy.
If you go online to TomDouglas.com, you can find 99 reasons to stay downtown and enjoy a little break from the traffic. Just if you're coming to work, stay downtown for a bit, go home late, all those sort of things. We have specials in every one of our restaurants.
And I'll add one more, Tom.
You'll add 100?
Like this, you make it 100.
Okay, you sit in our restaurants, and then we'll say, there's another reason.
Exactly.
To say hi to Terry. No, I would say we tape on Tuesday mornings. Generally, today's Wednesday, but driving in this morning might have been the fastest drive I've ever gone through rush hour.
Yeah.
Ever.
Did it
there
feel
wasn't
good?
A car on the road.
Yeah.
Even the cops that were situated to handle traffic problems were sitting smoking. On their car,
eating
on their
donuts
car hood.
And sipping coffee.
Yeah, it was amazing. So, anyway, it's interesting. You know, we're all down here in downtown, and they have just scared the bejesus out of people. So
you know, it feels like the same effect I saw in, I believe it was 1984 or 1983 when the Olympics were in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
I worked downtown, and they had scared the hell out of people in Los Angeles about the Olympics are coming, traffic's going to be here. Like a nightmare.
Uh-huh.
There was nobody on the freeway during the time of the Olympics. It was great.
It reminds me when we first started the Goodwill Games, right? After a couple of years after we...
Yeah.
And that was traumatic.
Mm.
With that almost put us out of business.
So. I mean, they do a good job at really scaring people away from...
Anyway, I know some of it's important, and I know it would be Carmageddon if they didn't scare some people away. But for those of you who want to try and make it down here...
Yeah, that still have to come downtown for whatever reason. Yeah. Hang out for a little bit
with us. So anyway, I just wanted to applaud everyone here in the audience for braving the traffic and coming to the show. Brittany Bard-Layman is going to be here in the Baker's Corner towards the end of the show. We're going to chop up a chicken to prove what? What do you want, Sarah, what do you want out of this chicken segment that we're going to do?
Well, Tom, it originally came up during the many, many discussions we've had of the boneless, skinless chicken breast.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the infamous.
Yes, the infamous. So we figured we'd prove how easy it is to debone your own chicken.
But do we want to taste test the breast against the thigh, or are we just boning a chicken and having fun with a chicken? Dancing with chicken.
I'm going to leave that up to you.
Okay.
I want you to make something good with the chicken breast. Come on.
So you want me to take it and make something delicious
out of it?
I guess I did argue
you
that.
You did.
Yeah.
You had a very strong opinion,
I think the opinion Tom was referring to was mostly when you go to a store and you buy a chicken breast that has no skin on it, that's got kind of liquid around it, and that looks totally lifeless. I think that's what the kind of breast he was referring to.
Yeah, people want you to resuscitate it, though.
So you're saying you want to go to the store and buy live chickens? No, I think the point was, yes, I did say last week, I believe, that you know if you did like a caper butter or something, that you could actually make it taste good.
Yeah.
But you really are tasting the lemon and the capers and the wine.
Which might not be so bad. You're getting a little protein in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're going to play around with our chicken in the next segment, I believe. We're going to share our favorite tastes of the week, both at home and at restaurants around town. And, of course, we're going to go toe-to-toe on trivia. And I think you might have to play today, Miss Katie O.
Oh, boy. I've been on a losing streak, so let's see what happens.
I like it.
I know you do.
I know.
Yeah, you lost last week. That
I
was
know.
A rarity. So.
Listen, we don't have to drag this on.
How does Molly feel
on.
About you giving away all this ice cream? Is your job in jeopardy?
I think, well, you know, they once thought that I was really clever, and now they're probably starting to question that.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
All right. extraordinary to ordinary.
No other way, silly. It's ordinary to extraordinary. This is where we take some ordinary dishes, and then you make them extraordinary by using all the knowledge you've gained throughout the years. The first one, near and dear to my heart, because I always love a singular pancake when I go to a diner. I don't need a whole plate. But how do you make an extraordinary pancake?
Do you not want the whole plate because it's too much food, or because you get tired of eating
pancake.
A buttermilk pancake?
Yeah, I get tired of eating it because I want a little bit of breakfast sausage. I want a little bit of eggs, you know. So I don't need a whole plate of pancakes. I like to share one with the table.
Is this potato pancake or just pancake?
Just a pancake.
Just pancake.
Good old-fashioned syrupy pancake.
Real syrup.
Real syrup.
I guess I'm a purist, and to me, making it extraordinary is go ahead and spending the money on real maple syrup, warming it up with a big pile of butter in the syrup, because I want my butter melted and my syrup melted. I hate when I bite into cold butter, either on bread or on pancake.
Do you like a thick, kind of like a buttermilk pancake, or do you like a little thinner, crepier style pancake? I bet you like a crepier.
No, actually, when it gets down to pancake, I like them a little bit thicker. Fluffy, and I like them nice and like finished with egg white. Whipped egg white, so it gives a little fluff.
Have you seen the Japanese trend of the really, really high fluffy pancakes?
Not yet.
Okay, well, I'm going to pull up the Instagram later. I'll show you a picture.
All right.
Okay, do we have time for
one
more?
I don't think we do, but one more thing I'll say. So my favorite pancake recipe is in Seattle Kitchen, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we used on at Lola's.
It's
a good pancake. People love our pancakes down there. But go back to this thing, the hot syrup with melted butter in it. It's 1-to-1, one part butter, one part syrup.
I love that ratio.
Okay,
that
and then
like a good
just
ratio.
Pour it over your hot pancake so everything stays hot. Don't put cold syrup out of the fridge on top of your pancake.
Absolutely not.
And everything's melted together. It's so delicious. And use salted butter or salt your butter.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to leave the rest of the show up to you, and I'm going to go downstairs and have pancakes.
I think that's a fine idea. Just show up when it's time to lose that tasty trivia.
That's a really good idea.
The whipped cream on top.
All right.
Coming up next, we've taken a bunch of questions from our listeners off the Facebook page, correct? And so we're going to answer those on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We are back in the Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio. It's Tom Douglas and Terry Rotrow and Katie O. And Katie, it's time for questions from our listeners.
Yes, and normally we would go to our Facebook page, Seattle Kitchen, where if you have a question for any of us, go to our Facebook page and we'd be happy to answer it, hopefully at some point. However, today we are going to start with one of our audience members that's here today. Hi, what's your name?
I'm Jim.
Jim, nice to meet you. Thank you for being so brave as to step up to the microphone. What is your question?
Well, I recently bought a new kind of heirloom squash, black futsco. I was wondering what the best way to...
Futsco?
What's the best way to prepare it? Jim, or have I stumped you?
You have totally stumped me.
Wait, so what is it?
Sarah, will you look up black futsco so I can actually see it? What's it remind you of?
Pumpkin.
Oh, pumpkin. And is it a black skin on the outside?
It starts black and it turns more yellow over time. It's very ribbed and bumpy.
Ribbed and bumpy.
And does it...
And hard like a pumpkin?
Yes. Well, actually a little softer. You can eat the skin once it's cooked.
Okay.
What about can you show us with your hands what kind of size we're working with? Okay.
Okay.
Yes, I see.
Is it like a Nerf football size?
That is actually, I was like, not quite a football, not quite a basketball, somewhere in between there.
It's quite sweet.
Mm-hmm. And have you tried things with it? We should do this as a segment, Stump the Chefs.
Yeah.
Have you, this is really exciting. Have you tried, I'm just going to ask you questions then. Mm-hmm. Have you tried a typical... have you tried typical things like you would with pumpkin?
I've done more like you would a squash. Sliced it, baked it.
Mm-hmm.
Have you baked it whole?
Not yet.
It's giving me kabocha vibes.
Yeah,
exactly. That's exactly what I'm thinking.
Online. So here's what I would do first thing, because my favorite thing at a Japanese restaurant, when my wife loves tempura. But of that tempura, I always, well, she's not looking, I steal the squash
tempura. You're so smart.
Mm-hmm. I know.
That is the best piece.
It's my favorite part. And this looks perfect for that because the skin's edible. You just take it and you slice it super thin, maybe a 1/16 of an inch. you know, without cutting your fingers as thin as you can. Dredge it in a fresh tempura that's got some soda water in it, so it's nice and bubbly. And then put it into a 350-degree fryer, and you're on your way to deliciousness.
And here I thought I stumped you.
And I will also try roasting it whole. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stump you as well. roast it whole, cut it in half, take the meat out, and make a pie. Because if it has a nice sweetness like I think mm-hmm. it does, like a kombucha idea, a pie with squash and honey and nuts, you'd have a good
Sounds
pie on
great.
The hand.
So Sarah pulled this up online, and now that I see the spelling, I can tell you for sure it is a Japanese varietal. It's the Black Futsu, TSU, and it's a Japanese squash. And what they recommend, actually, in addition to all the things that we obviously just said that are really smart, is that it's very good, thinly sliced, and eaten raw. And pickled.
Like a fuyu persimmon.
Yeah.
Or
a
haiku persimmon.
Fuyu, I want to say. Yeah. But anyway, fun. Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
We had to take to the internet for that one. That's impressive. That's
all right. Nice. What do we have from our Facebook page? And just out of curiosity, every time I turn on the news anymore, they're saying people are dropping Facebook. Do we need to get a new page? Do we have to have an Instagram page?
I love Instagram, but... Yeah.
I mean, I was going to say let's put it to our Facebook audience, but I guess they're the wrong people to ask. So, Tom, I figured we could talk a little bit about last week. You asked people for suggestions of classes that you should have at the Hot Stove Society, mm-hmm. and we got some responses.
Oh, good.
So I figured we could talk a little bit about just some tips for people wondering about these different topics. One that was really popular was a class just on sauces. What kind of sauces should you make? What ingredients should you have ready? Mm-hmm. What ones are the best all around or that you keep special, hidden away for very specific recipes?
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up because that is a class we've done during one of our Hot Stove Intensive weekends. And we had Bridget on this side of our stage. If you've been to the Hot Stove, we have two cutting boards on each side of the stove. And we had Bridget on one side doing classic French sauces. She is European trained. She taught at the Art Institute for... 15 years, or 19 years, something like that. And in all those kind of basic classics. And I, on the other hand, am not.
Mm.
And don't generally eat that way. I'm much more of a fresh sauce person, either vinaigrettes or pureed fruits or cooked vegetables. I don't do a lot of demi-glaze like you do.
Right.
So we were doing kind of trying to accomplish the same dish in intention, but with that classic sauce and with a modern sauce. And I think that would be a super fun class.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that sauces is definitely, especially stocks. I think people should have a little stock in their fridge so they don't have to buy or not have that extra layer of flavor that it allows you to have at the end of a dish. You know, we're talking about chicken breast earlier. You know, you sear some chicken breast or some chicken, whatever. You know, you're finished with the pan. What do? You deglaze the pan, which means you basically put a little liquid inside that pan to get all that stuff that's stuck on the bottom of your pan. Then you put a little cube of that demi glace, and then boom, you've got a wonderful sauce because that's already ready and full of flavor, very intense. And then you throw in some fresh herb, and you've got this wonderful sauce ready to go on top of your chicken.
One little question I would ask in that process there, Chef-y. That'd be you.
No, I get it. I don't mind.
I always think of you as scraping out all... When you have, let's say, you've just sautéed your boneless, skinless chicken breast, and you've got a few little nice bits in there, but you had to put some sort of fat in there to give it some flavor, like bacon fat.
Yeah.
Now you've got your... You pull your chicken breast out. It's resting while you make your sauce. Are you completely rubber scraping your pan to get rid of the fat, but not the brown bits? Or are you letting some of that fat into your sauce?
Well, if I have fat left on the bottom of the pan...
You have a little bacon fat.
I'm going to take the pan. I'm going to drip the fat out of the pan.
Mm-hmm.
So the pan is completely dry of fat. Then I'm going to put a liquid...
That was my question. You just dripped it out. Or do you actually take a rubber spatula and scrape the fat out? You said completely...
I'm going to take it out in a cup. So I'm going to reserve it on the side, basically. I'm going to put it on the side. And then I'm going to put some liquid on top of that stuff that's stuck on the bottom of the pan. That's how the good deglazing happens.
So it's okay to have a film, I guess my question is.
Absolutely.
To have a film of fat there on the
absolutely.
Bottom for you.
Yes.
Yes. I would agree with you.
And fat is not going to...
you were asking me.
It's not going to be hurting anybody. It's just going to be more intense flavor. But bottom line is, yes, I think a class on stock and sauces is a very plus for a lot of people because it's that extra tool you have in your at your hand and you've made ahead of time, either on the spur of the moment or put it in your freezer. Sauces and stock freezes really well.
All right. What else do they want for classes here at the Hot Stove?
All right. The other most popular, which we'll go into more next week, is low-priced meat cuts or... just how do you maximize the yield from whole cuts of meat or full carcass birds?
Mm-hmm. Terry, just going back for 1 second, we only have a minute, but the pot au feu you made with the neck, the beef neck, is that, by the time you're all said and done, meat-wise, is it low cost?
Oh, very low cost, because you're buying the you're buying the bottom of the totem pole in terms of roast meat or cut meat. It's the lowest roast meat you
what
can buy.
What is that? Is that $2 a pound? Is that... $4 a pound?
I would say somewhere around $3 a pound.
$3 a pound.
So a pound of meat, even after it's boiled, which is going to lose some weight, it's still a lot of food. I mean, you're breaking it down.
It's not really a pound of meat. You just took the neck bone out of it. It can't be more than a 50% yield.
No, absolutely not. But my point is that 50% is definitely a full yield of the actual meat, where some meat keeps on, once you cook them again, they keep diminishing and, disappear. Plus, it's giving you all that flavor into your soup, because the broth, I didn't mention that earlier, but the broth, you use it as a soup to start your meal. So you're breaking it down into a 2 or 3 day meals. So I think it's...
But in reality, your meat is costing you, if you bought it for $3,
a pound,
and it's 50% yield, it's costing you $4.50 a pound.
Well, $4.50.
Right.
So
but still, $4.50 a pound, I mean, look at the cost of...
Like skirt steak or...
Yeah.
Chuck steak or something like that.
Right.
All right. That's just trying to get to that. All right. Now we're going to chop up the chicken here on Cairo Radio on 97.3 FM. Kitchen Show. It's Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas.
I'm Terry Rotero, the chef in the hat.
I'm Katie O.
And Katie, a couple of weeks ago, I made a statement
you're known
opinions.
To do it.
It's okay to have opinions.
It's all right.
Anyway, I just said that boneless, skinless chicken breasts were really, if that would be a last resort for me. That would be the,
Yes.
I'd probably go vegetarian if that was the only thing left.
Yes, you had some very strong personal opinions that if you had a whole chicken, if you had all the pieces to choose from, the breast, certainly boneless and skinless, would not be your first choice. You'd look for a thigh, maybe a delicious fatty wing, or even a leg, which I know that we're not even really that big of fans of.
I don't even love the leg.
How about the carcass to make a stock?
Totally would pick up the carcass.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
But the boneless, skinless breast is something that is much beloved by a lot of people, and
apparently,
certainly a lot of our listeners.
Right.
And so really what you have in front of you, we're here in the Hot Stove Society, beautiful cooking school. You've got a cutting board in front of you and a raw, whole chicken.
So there's a couple of things about that, right? At least if you're going to eat the boneless, skinless chicken breast, buy the whole bird, and then at least make good chicken stock out of the rest. If you're scared of the thigh or the leg or whatever, just make good chicken stock. And then at least you have some redeeming value after eating a tasteless, boneless, skinless chicken breast.
That's right.
I would definitely want to be curious to hear someone telling me why they're scared of the legs.
You know what I think it is? I don't think anyone's scared. I think sometimes it's a texture. I think, a lot of people now that are in their 20s and 30s maybe grew up in a time of chicken fingers, and so they don't want the bones. So there's that. But also, in January, I think a lot of people think about their diets, and they start thinking about really leaner cuts of meat that they want to flavor up a little bit.
And if you read any article about if you're on a diet or sports medicine, or they're always saying eat a lot of bones. Boneless, skinless chicken, right?
High protein, low fat is what they're thinking.
So is rabbit.
So,
just putting that in.
Okay.
Well, that would be furless. So we have invited Kathy and Denny up to our stage here at the Hot Stove, and we're going to talk about cutting up this chicken to see if there's any worries about that. Denny, how about you starting us off?
Well, washing the chicken, I guess, is the thing I remember being very important was to wash the chicken.
Yeah, I don't wash the chicken because I'm going to cook it.
Okay.
Because as soon as you wash it, you're not washing it in hot water, are you?
No, cold.
Cold water, right? So you're spreading all that possible salmonella all over your sink, your sponge, and all over that. Because I guarantee after you wash chicken, you're not going through and bleaching out your sink.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. So you've actually created more problems by washing that in the sink.
Mm-hmm.
Kathy, any questions for you before we start?
That's a very good question. I'm, you know, into buying the frozen parts, so this will be really good to know.
Yeah.
Because budgets are important.
And sometimes the parts on sale are a better deal, but most often the whole chicken is the better deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so let's explain what you're doing, Tom. You started by cutting in between the
breast
and the thigh.
And I'm cutting towards the carcass, because you always want your knife blade to be facing bone, right? Because we're trying to get all the meat off. We don't want to cut into the meat.
Right.
And then I just kind of dislocate the joint there a little bit and then cut around. And back here, Terry, as you know, in the back of the bottom end of the thigh is the oyster. And that's when you know you've become a little bit better butcher, is when you pick up, there's a little piece of meat right in the back of the back of the chicken. And that's the oyster. And that's when you feel like, wow, I'm pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's when you know how to clean a chicken.
Okay. Now I'm going to go down the breastbone with my boning knife. And I'm just going to go down and identify the wing joint. And then I take my fingers and I kind of remove the chicken tender. You know, that's how those tenders got started, right? It was that there's a little strip kind of loose from the breast, which is called the tenderloin of the chicken. And they sometimes fall off. And there's a way to serve what's called the airline cut of a chicken breast. And that's usually with the tender off and just a little drumstick of the wing left on.
Right.
Okay, Terry, so there's one bone-in, skin-on chicken breast. I mean, and that's kind of barely bone-in, right?
It's just and it's got little, the wing on, the wing tip on.
So it's barely. So I'm going to take the other one off. And as I said on last week's show, I would do this very same thing. But now I'm going to take the skin off, and I've taken the wing joint off. Just pull it off with your hands. And I'm going to take a meat hammer. And I'm going to just gently make what Terry would call a paillard or something like that. And the idea here is that I'm just taking that thick breast. You know, a breast is thin at the edge and thick in the center. I'm taking it all down to one level. Okay? Terry, do you want to start some beurre noisette?
Yeah. So this is called brown butter, also called beurre noisette in French. This is how you make butter double tasty. Because now it's very nutty. It's just before it burns. It's the brownish color of the butter. Little white foam on the top. This is when you drop your chicken breast in there. That just right now, you just enhance the flavor again.
And for everyone that can't see it, including our listeners, right now on the radio, Terry, you put the skin on wing, kind of bone on chicken breast in, skin side down into the butter. And Tom gently laid his paillard piece right next to it.
All right, so all we're going to do today is just salt and pepper. And I think the point is, you can see Terry's crisping up the skin, but the point is, when you take a bite of the skinless, or you take a bite of the brown skin on, is it worth losing the calories of that little piece of skin to get, you know, to get where you are? I don't. When you add 3 tablespoons of butter,
I was going to say,
sure that,
I think it's a bit of a moot point this, right, with all that brown butter in it. But I like your technique, Tom, of flattening it out, because really then this becomes a textural change.
Right, and it's a 5-minute cook.
Yeah.
And the regular chicken breast is probably a 10-minute cook,
right,
and maybe even a little oven time if you want.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Chef, you've turned it over. You've got a nice little sear on that. And you can see, if you're listening, the tenderloin kind of releases itself from the breast. There's no problem with that, right? You just simply serve it with the tenderloin. Now, on the paillard, I took it to about a half inch.
Right.
You could take it. What have you taken it to? Eighth inch?
Eighth 16? Of an inch?
Yeah,
right.
Really.
You can put a piece of plastic wrap right on top of the chicken breast before you bang on it so it doesn't stick onto your hammer.
Mm-hmm.
And just go at it, you know, between 2 pieces of parchment or 2 pieces of plastic wrap, and then you'll have a wonderful piece of chicken, super thin. That will cook in like 2 minutes.
With the both of these chicken breasts, though, in this butter, I feel like there's a lot of treatments you could then do to enhance the flavor. What are some additions that you could add to this brown butter to give it a little something-something?
So for me at this point, I would pull the chicken breast out, right,
mm-hmm.
like I did the paillard. It's pretty much done, and it could rest to medium well. I don't mind just a touch of pink. So the health department says take it over 155. I would probably pull it at 145 and let it go to 150, 55, somewhere in that area. But in the restaurants, we have to cook it, you know, over that temperature.
Correct.
So at this point, I would do that. I would pull the butter, just pour it out, but leave a little bit of the residual butter. I wouldn't, like, scrape the pan, but I would pour all the extra fat out. And then I would throw in just a touch of garlic, maybe a little touch of shallot, some zest of lemon, but real zest. Mm-hmm. So I take my peeler and I julienne the zest so that it has real texture, and some capers.
Yeah.
And then saute that for just a second, add a little vermouth, and then you're going to want to add maybe one tablespoon of butter at the end of that to kind of bind your
fresh
sauce.
Fresh butter.
Yeah. Fresh butter, also, not the used butter.
Also want to mention, the heat has not changed all time I was cooking the breast, okay? We haven't low down the heat or do anything like this. It's basically even cooking.
Terry, you haven't turned the chicken breast with the skin yet. Now, why is that?
Mainly because it's on the skin, so it takes a little bit longer to start cooking in the inside mm-hmm. of the chicken breast on that side. And also, I want the skin to be crispy. I don't want it to
right.
be soft. And
so the point is, you could literally cook your whole chicken breast. As long as you have enough butter to baste, you could cook your whole chicken breast if you wanted mm-hmm. on the one side. But you want to leave it twice as long, three times as long as if you're cooking a boneless, skinless one, because it doesn't matter at that point,
yeah.
right? You don't have to worry about getting the crispy skin. And the thing about the butter, right? What is nice about the butter? It's got whey in it, milk mm-hmm. product in it, right? Mm-hmm. It's got the fat. Like, if we just did this in clarified butter,
right.
we wouldn't have the same thing going on, right?
Correct.
Because the milk fats in there are turning brown, that is a huge amount of flavor mm-hmm. In your saute process. Okay, we should be able to pull that paillard out.
And just so it's clear to everybody, we have not taken the butter that's in the pan. Remember, there was a lot of butter in that pan?
Right.
I don't take that butter and put it on top of the chicken. I will take some of it and mix it with a little bit of vinegar and make a quick hot vinaigrette right on top of my chicken breast if I don't have time to make a sauce. That's how you use the whole thing. And that butter is very nutty. It's got all that chicken flavor in there. So it's very tasty. So it's a quick way to make a quick vinaigrette to put right on top of your chicken.
Okay.
With a green salad, you're set. Very healthy lunch, regardless of what anybody thinks.
So here we are now. Kathy and Denny both have a little taste, one skin on, one skin off, both done in brown butter. I would say because of the butter, you're not going to taste a lot of difference, but you are going to get a little fattiness from the skin.
Correct.
And if you want to see how we did this, just go to our Facebook page. We have a video on our Facebook page.
That's right. We did a Facebook Live video while this was all going on. So if you want to see Tom deboning the chicken and how Terry cooks it, just head on over there, facebook.com/Seattle Kitchen.
Okay, we have time for one quick. What do you think?
Fabulous. I love the skin. I've always liked skin.
Yeah.
No, I prefer the skin for sure. I just did this Saturday night for company, and except that I finished it in the oven.
That's normally what we would do in the restaurant, too, is finish that in the oven. We just are on radio time.
That's right.
All right. Thank you. There's our chicken challenge. And we're glad that Kathy and Denny joined us. Kathy, you get the signed apron, the radio show apron, from Katie, Terry, and myself.
Thank you very much.
Up next, a very cheesy party on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen. We're here at the Hot Stove Society. Kathy is so happy. She's got her signed radio show apron on. If you want to see Kathy in her apron, just go to our Facebook page. It's very exciting.
Yeah, she's looking quite snappy over
and
there.
And she looks just like your teacher when you were growing up.
I feel like I could learn something.
From Fresno.
For sure.
Teacher
yeah.
from Fresno.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a very cheesy dinner party because apparently there's a surplus of cheese.
That's right. There is a huge surplus of cheese, so reports NPR. We've got 1.4 billion pounds.
Hmm.
So, as we like to do, we're going to do a dinner party at my place. You two are cooking, and mm-hmm. we're going to use American cheese. Not American cheese singles, to be mm-hmm. clear. It doesn't have to be a Kraft single, although, if you'd like, that's fine. But we're going to be using American cheese products in every single course.
American cheese.
Go ahead.
Cool. American cheese product. I like
mm-hmm.
that.
When we get cheese surplus at Food Lifeline, we get these big boxes, or like 50-pound boxes. Terry, remember when we used to buy butter in those 50-pound cubes?
Yeah.
But they have 50-pound boxes of
wow.
cheese, and it's or sometimes it's grated, but most of the time it's just a big block of cheese.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty cool.
That's an impressive block of cheese.
Hopefully the food banks around the country are all receiving government surplus cheese.
I hope
and
so.
It's not going to waste.
Yeah, that's what we definitely do not want.
I'm going to start it off.
Great.
I'm trying to think of the American cheese that I would use instead of Parmesan. So I'm going to use the stuff in the green can, the Kraft fake Parmesan.
Wow. Yeah. Old school.
Yeah, old school.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go to the store. We're just going to go trashy the whole way on this. Go to the store,
uh-huh.
and I'm going to buy some Pepperidge Farm puff pastry. I'm going to lay it out.
I'm listening. You've
lay
got
out
my
the
attention.
Whole the whole sheet.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to brush it with a little egg wash. Just beat up an egg and just brush it. And then I'm going to put on my smoked paprika. You can buy it. You can buy it from the Hot Stove here. It's my brand. Or you can buy it at the store, smoked paprika. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to take some of the Kraft green can cheese. Full fat. Oh, my God. Full fat.
You know what?
Cheese.
You deserve it.
I did. I worked hard on that chicken. And then I'm going to take a little knife or a pizza cutter, and I'm going to roll strips. And then I'm going to twist them. I'm going to put them on a sheet pan.
You going to make some cheese straws?
I made cheese straws just like that.
Well, wait. What happened when you put that stuff in the oven?
Doesn't
it
melt?
I cooked it at 400 degrees, and it puffs up beautifully and browns. And the smoked paprika is a gorgeous color. And I stuffed my olive with some American blue. So for my martini. So I have cheese straws, a stuffed olive, and a martini. Now it's your turn, Jeff.
This is going to be a challenge.
I'm totally ecstatic. Yeah. I'm going to make some cheese curd, and I'm going to take those cheese curd, and I'm going to wrap them up with a very light batter.
I've had these.
And then fry them in olive oil.
Can I just interrupt for 1 second?
Yeah.
This is the weirdest thing I've ever heard. Your fascination with fried cheese curds.
Why?
You won't even go on the same block of a McDonald's.
I know. But this is made by Beecher. This is all natural. If McDonald's was starting clean, I would go there.
Okay, fine. Okay. I just find it interesting.
I know you do.
Yeah.
I know you do.
Well, who doesn't like a buttered piece of cheese fried? Olive oil. Then take them out and then make a nice little harissa dressing, my favorite, hot spice, and then serve that. We do this at Luke, and it's absolutely delicious.
Yeah, I think we got like 3 orders of it the other night. Very good.
No, it's easy to eat. It's got a nice little chew to it. The crispiness from the batter that's really light. It's made with cornstarch, a little bit of water, and some. Mm-hmm. We put an egg in there.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes a very nice, crispy little batter to go around the cheese curd. And it's delicious. Who doesn't like that?
Before I want to get started on the entree, I don't think we've invited anyone to dinner.
Oh.
We're just gorging ourselves on cheese?
Yeah. Who did you invite to dinner?
You know what? I think we should invite the furloughed government workers.
Okay.
Yes.
That's a good idea.
I think we've got a surplus of cheese. Mm-hmm. We need to help out our fellow Americans who are not getting paid right
and
now.
And we're cooking for 500 today.
I think it's 800,000, if I'm not mistaken.
No, but 500 local.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we're going to bring all them over and serve them cheese, some American cheese.
So we've had the heavy cheese straws. We've had the heavy curds deep fried in olive oil and with vinaigrette.
Yeah, you're going to make a light entree?
So I'm going to make a light entree.
Okay.
I can wait.
I'm going to make a Laura Chanel goat cheese fondue.
Oh, I was hoping
something
you'd
light.
Make
yeah,
a fondue.
Just, I love that. It's just goat cheese warmed up with some cream, and you can choose either chives or maybe a little lavender or maybe both. So you just have a little fragrance to your cheese. And then I'm going to serve it today with grilled vegetables. So we're going to just take our grill out, our grill pan, or the charcoal grill would be best.
Delish.
So grilled vegetables and grilled bread. And we're just going to have a little fondue party with our furloughed friends. And we haven't even eaten any furry friends. We're just having a veggie entree.
I like it.
Yeah.
I like this
so
very much.
So broccoli, just a hard grill on the broccoli, hard grill on cauliflower, celery, zucchini, you
carrots.
Can still find this time of year, carrots. But some of those you might want to blanch first before you grill them, like the carrots or something of that nature. Fennel is great on the grill. And so that to me is what it's going to be. And then, of course, if you're using your charcoal grill, do your big slice of crusty baguette or country bread or something like that.
Yes.
Can't have a fondue without bread.
That's been doused in olive oil and then grill that hard. I want burnt, crispy edges.
As do I.
Yes.
Don't just warm my bread up. Grill it.
They call it toast for a reason. They don't call it warmed bread. You want toast.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
Also some apples. I know you love to do that at the Hell's Kitchen is have a few little kind of fruity good things on there. And this time of year, the apples are delicious. So slices those as well.
I think with our tariff issue that we have plenty of apples right now in the state. So our furloughed friends can have a million apples.
Mm-hmm.
And and some fondue so to go with
we
it.
We might send him home with some apples, as a matter of fact.
A little basket.
All right.
No, it's not. I mean, I'm not making fun of this, so I want to be clear that we are serious. We're feeling for those folks.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. So, for dessert, what should we do? We've got a couple
of we can go either way. We can go cheese tray, which would be easy to just fill up with many of different cheeses from the area. But I think I'm going to do a little puff pastry with Potanzen camembert. They have a delicious camembert. Mm. Bake those two things together and do like a nice little plum and apple kind of compote and put that right on top of that. Serve that as a dessert. I think that would be a nice little touch. The whole thing warm. So take your camembert, cut it in small pieces, put it into your puff pastry, wrap the whole thing up, put it in the oven. Brush it with a little bit of egg wash so it's nice and crispy skin on the outside. Bake it all the way, and then when you take it out on the bottom of the plate, put a nice compote or mixture of cooked apple and plums. Put that on the bottom of your plate with a little bit of drizzled honey on top. And bingo bango, you've got a nice little dessert of cheese.
Bingo bango.
That is a teary-ism right there. Bingo bango.
And here's the other thing. I'd like to invite some of my furloughed workers. You know, because of Carmageddon, we furloughed some of our own workers who could take the time off. So they could come and join us.
All right.
Because for a month, they you know, we were struggling with business here in Seattle. So
let's invite them. Let's invite them. All the people.
So was that cheesy enough?
Oh, it's never cheesy enough.
If you're looking for cheese in the Washington State, I mean, I would go Quillisasket goat cheese in Rice, Washington. Does some beautiful goat cheeses.
I haven't seen them forever. Where are they
I know.
Now?
Well, they sell. I think they still sell at the Spokane Market.
Oh.
But they used to come
Rick
to town.
Rick and I can't remember who.
Rick and Ann. Rick and.
Yeah, I don't remember. But anyway, they always made beautiful cheese and had that great farm out there.
So. And then the Montellier in Walla Walla, outside of Walla Walla, also do a great sheep cheese, you know, and so on and so forth. So there's plenty of farm around the whole state of Washington to be able to go around those cheeses.
All right, up next, now that we're all cheesy, getting cheesy with it, we're going to do our Taste of the Week right here on Cairo Radio. Stay with us. We're at 97.3 FM on your dial.
Tom, let's go.
It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. We're back at it. Thank you for hanging with us. We've got 99 reasons why you should have stayed with us. And assuming that you did, you can hear them. You know, earlier when we were talking about how to approach Carmageddon here in Seattle, our marketing team, headed by Madeline Dow, came up with this idea to come up with 99 reasons why you should stay downtown. Let's say you're working, why stay a little later so you can miss traffic, or another good reason to come downtown to make up for some of the pain of the traffic. So we started this out. We sent it to each of our restaurants, and each of them were responsible for coming back to us with some ideas. We had one central theme, which was it had to relate to 99 or to traffic or to crashes or to all the things on the road. So we all took turns, and I've been doing a lot of media around this because it's kind of caught people's fancy. Tina, you said it caught your fancy.
Yeah, because it's clever. It's super funny. And not a lot of people are this interesting and fun when it comes to marketing stuff. Plus, there's lots of good deals.
There's lots of good deals.
I've got to tell you. As someone who enjoys eating downtown but maybe doesn't have the budget for it, this is speaking to me.
Do you prefer a happy hour or a crabby hour?
I'm down for a crabby.
See, crabby hour is pretty good. Yeah. That's what we do at Etta's. We have crabby hour specials on crab the whole time. So that we've had for quite a while. But my favorite of the group, I have two that I'm going to tell you of our marketing plans. And these are our – I'd have to find them to tell you what the deal is. That's the problem.
I know. I got it.
My favorite is – I created this one, Crash Test Yummies.
Oh, my gosh. That was one that I picked that I loved.
That you liked?
I really liked that
one. That was mine. Yeah, thank you very much.
What restaurant was that?
That's Dahlia Bakery. And we're doing specials every afternoon on different cookies and stuff like that. The Traffic Jam, which is a jam-filled cookie. And, you know, just goofy things like that. The other one I really liked, I don't know who came up with this one, but it's Don't Get Cod on I-5.
Meow. Mm-hmm.
Get it? Don't Get Cod.
fried cod with pickled rhubarb and remoulade for $6.
$6. Who knew?
Yeah.
But anyway, so don't get caught on I-5. Who came up with that? That's brilliance.
That is brilliance.
I'm going to send them to the penitentiary.
I will say that at the Molly Moon's office, I was having a meeting with Miss Molly Moon herself, and she was cracking up over that cod pun. She just was like, great dad jokes. Great dad jokes here.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Tom, your Crash Test Yummies Happy Hour is a rotation of featured items on the Dahlia Bakery that are 20% off from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. at the Dahlia Bakery. So that's pretty fun.
And 10 a.m. to 11 a.m., if it's anything like my 8:30 commute this morning, which was the shortest time it's ever taken me to get to Seattle, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. should be really quiet.
Nobody's around. Go snack down at the Dahlia Bakery.
Sarah, did you have any favorites of our list?
I've got to say, one of my favorites is just eat your feelings on the way home. Mm-hmm. Just got to go with the basic. And it's a slice of triple coconut cream pie for $7.75 or cocoa pie bites for $3.
For $3.
Nice.
That's a
free dollar off, deal. 25% off.
It's good stuff.
Katie, did you like any of them?
Well, you took the one that I like, the Crash Test Yummies, because, you know, I was around when the Crash Test Dummies came out with their hit single. But I do love Parking Tots.
Parking Tots.
Yeah.
There's no shortage of parking tots.
Partially because
in downtown Seattle. There were seven out front of the hotel this morning.
Oh, my God.
Outside of Hot Stove. Seven parking spaces. Just wide open.
That's true. Actually, when I came to the radio show, I just slid into a street parking spot. No big deal. Didn't even have to parallel park.
I know. It's like...
It was a rarity.
Other than how it affects business, it's really super cool from a downtown commuter standpoint.
How about the Alaskan Way I Forgive You from the Carlyle Room?
Yeah.
Very nice. It's a Happy Hour-inspired Grammy Award-nominated Brandy Carlyle album and Horrific Traffic.
And Horrific Traffic. Speaking of Brandy, you know, we're having a viewer party. Not a viewer party. What are we having?
Listener?
We're having a watching party of the Grammys.
Oh, fun!
At the Palace Ballroom on the 10th of February. And because we're not allowed to sell, you know, to see the TV part, we can give it away for free. But you have to get a ticket in order to be able to come because we can't have 1,000 people there, right?
That's right.
So if you go to TomDouglas.com, you can find tickets for the viewing party. And we're going to sell, you know, plates of food and things like that are going to be available. But it's going to be super fun. We love Brandy Carlile. As you know, I named a restaurant after her.
Yes.
And I can't even believe that she is nominated 6 times for a Grammy this year.
So well, pretty that awesome. Album was on the top of the charts for a lot of people's best of 2018 list. So not super surprising there, but super proud of our hometown hero.
We have a special called Western Avenue Pile Up. Down at Seatown, and that's a bowl of fries, I think, for a couple of bucks or something like that. It's really about having fun. The other one I liked, you know, Jay-Z's song. I think it's Jay-Z, right? 99 Problems, but a fish ain't one.
Yeah. That's the original version.
I think that's the original version. Turns out a chicken's not one either.
How about the Viaduct Fat Hush Puppies?
Viaduct.
Duck
Hush Puppies.
I also like the Not Your Routine Poutine. I like a good rhyming scheme there, and I also don't mind a little poutine. So.
Now tell me what's the fascination with poutine is. Is anyone in our group... Just
comfort
love
food.
Poutine.
You love it? I love poutine.
Yeah, I like it too.
What do you love about it? What?
It's greasy goodness for one. It's comfort food for another. There's nothing better than gravy and potatoes.
But like, it's cold in 2 minutes. It's like bad nachos. You know?
No, you got to eat them fast.
You got to eat them hot. Yeah, you got to eat them hot.
Sarah, you seem to have opinions on this.
I would say that poutine is meant for a group, and so there is not enough time within that group for them to go cold. You are all like fighting
Getting
your way
there.
To those fries as fast as possible.
Terry?
No, thank you.
No, thank you. Me either. It never caught me, which I don't know why, but I had...
I'm driving.
I don't know. I can't figure out what
trashy,
it is.
Trashy, like coconut trashy prawns caught you, but...
Yeah, baby. That's what we're talking about. Coconut prawns, deep fried, crispy, crunchy. Katie loves them, too.
I love them.
You can't even deny it.
You know, here's the thing.
You know
I
who else loves them?
Terry.
I do.
Chef in the Chapeau.
Tom Douglas turned me on to those.
The problem is I kind of love all the trashy foods. There's very few that you're going to put
well, that's why you work
me.
Out all the time.
That's why I work out all the time, so I can eat the trashy food.
So those are our tastes of the week, all the different puns at our joints over the time. Come visit Terry at his restaurants. Come visit us over the next few weeks. We think that, or at least my experience so far, is that it's not as bad as they're all making it out
to
be.
That's right. Treat yourself.
And if you're downtown, just hang out, right? Hang out.
Yeah,
that's right.
Revisit your downtown.
Yeah. Okay. Up next, Sarah took us on a trip to China. Find out more about that when we come back on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. This is the Seattle Kitchen Show. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
I'm Katie O.
And Sarah, you had come over to my house to check out my pantry.
That's right, and I saw more than just the pantry.
That doesn't sound good.
I saw your china, too.
Oh, okay.
So you had a really large collection of plates and dishes, mm-hmm. something that I don't have, and I had never really like considered how many different kinds of dishes mm-hmm. that you have. So I figured let's have a discussion around that, too, and then we can head back to your kitchen and hear a little bit more about your own personal collection.
All right, so let's go check that out.
So we often talk, you know, KDO is always saying, I don't have room in my kitchen for anything. And I said, I have room in my house for everything. And it's a matter of how you plan, right? So this cabinet here is all backup china. I keep 15 sets of china in my house, almost 20 sets now. I keep a set from every one of the restaurants so that when I'm doing a dish that I think is going to work, say, at the Palace Kitchen, I want to see how it looks on the Palace Kitchen china or from Etta's or from Seatown. So I keep backup china for all of those different places. And I love little pieces that you can kind of set the table with, different kinds of ramekins, you know, all that sort of thing. So, like, when I'm cooking Asian, right, you know, I want to use Asian ware, so I keep that whole area there. And Asian's a big area, right? But we have a set for when, you know, Jackie's part Greek. We have a set of Greek china, Spanish, Mediterranean kind of china. When we do a lot of, like, Maui meat or things, so I have a set of Hawaiian kind of looking, classic French, classic Italian. I have still the opening china from the Dahlia Lounge in 1989 is right up there on the top. I still have full sets of that. So, you know, just we buy platters when we go on our trips so that when we're serving food that we maybe had in the Greek market in Greece, we have a platter that we can serve it on and bring back that memory. So, super fun.
So, Tom, you had both china in your garage, in your mm-hmm. hidden cupboards, as well as in a china cabinet, and 20 different kinds of dishes. I mean, our audience was just listening to you in your kitchen as well, and I saw some surprised looks. That's uh-huh. a lot of dishes. Terry, Katie, do you guys have that many sets of china?
No, my house is half the size of his house, so we have 10. No, we have about, I have about probably 4 different kinds of china just for serving, about 8 people. So that's about what I have. But I have a cupboard full of many different type of small dishes, platters, all kind of different tools that I've used over the year, that, like the egg popper and all that stuff that are in my cabinet. And I took a picture of it, so there's going to be probably a picture of it on the internet.
And what about keepsakes? Like when people visit the Pike Place Market and they say, oh, you know, I'm in a hotel, I can't really buy anything. But in my mind, I would go to Sur La Table or to one of the mm-hmm. craftspeople and buy a tablecloth, right? And then I'd go to the Seattle Knife and I'd get a little cheese set. And I'd go right. to Beecher's and get some cheese. And then you just lay your tablecloth out over your bedspread, right? Yeah, and have a little picnic. And then you have a keepsake memory of the market from that time that you visited and walked the cobblestones of Pike Place Market.
I have tons of those. Those little dishes, I have tons of those.
Yeah. Katie, how about you?
I have to take a different method because I've been living in apartments in smaller spaces. So I have to be a little bit more choosy about what I keep. And everyone is on the Condo Mari method right now. If you don't know about it, I'll tell you about it later.
Yeah.
But it's simplifying. But I've had to do that over the years every single time that I move. So I really have a set of kind of classic white dishes where everything is going to look good in the sizes that I want. But then, to your point, Tom, there are some things that I keep around forever. Actually, your wife, Jackie, bought me a beautiful set of bread and butter plates with like gilded gold little edges, and they just make for really lovely dessert presentation, or if you're doing little cheeses or nachos, so I'll bring those out. My parents gave me a set of kind of deeper soup bowls, Japanese bowls. I take those everywhere that I've moved to. And then my friend Callie, who's a food stylist and a prop stylist, so I'm very lucky, often gets a surplus of beautiful glassware. And so then I have this kind of fun collection of really great, really great glassware. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that I like to keep, things that make me really happy. As soon as things kind of get dinged or dented, especially on that white set, I'll get rid of those and get new ones. No,
that's
need to
hard
put those
part.
Around.
When you lose an heirloom, I always believe in using that stuff.
Tough.
I inherited my grandmother's silver. We have maybe 10 different sets of silver, but I always used it. My mother never uses it unless it's a holiday or some special occasion.
Right.
So she gets a little freaked out, and I put it through the dishwasher. You know, every time I use it, I think of my grandma.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'd rather not think of her just one time a year.
Right.
You know, I'd rather just use it and have fun with it, and when it's done, it's done.
Yeah, these are active things. They're not static, dead things that you want to put away. You want to bring them out and enjoy them. And as we were saying earlier with the chicken, it's a visual thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it brings you a level of happiness when you use it.
So I don't have any family heirlooms that are dishes or plates or anything like that. If I wanted to start having like my own set that I actually keep and pass on, where would you buy that from? Like, what are your go-to places to buy like these kinds of nice dishes?
Well, fair or you know, things like fair are a great place when there's antique sales or anything like this. Mm-hmm. It's nice to just go and see what's browse around, and you're gonna find some deal, unbelievable deal, with some very cool old-looking plates. And if that's what you're into, that's definitely a great place to start, because you can get a whole set of 6 or 8 plates with everything, the butter plate, the soup bowl.
Yeah, what
are
you saying? I would second that.
You know, you can find a set for not very much money in an antique shop, you know, 20, 50 cents, a buck a plate.
And my favorite coffee mugs were gifted to me, and they were actually Japanese ceramic mugs from the 70s with beautiful prints on them, but those were found from Goodwill. So I think, you know, it's really dependent on how much time you have to invest in searching for these things versus the style that you're going for. If you want something a little bit more modern, you might go to one of the stores on Capitol Hill like Todakayo and look at those. It's going to be an investment, but you're going to have these things for a while, and you're going to use them and look at
them. I think you have the time, since you don't have any right now, so you get plenty of time to just look for it. Just come up with a style or something you like. It's more important than...
You never know what's going to become an heirloom.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny because, like, my wedding china that we registered for and asked people for, I haven't used it in 25 years, I don't think. But my simple little antipasto dishes that I bought in the flea market area?
Le marché aux puces in Paris.
Yeah, I bought them
flea
there.
Flea market.
Stupid little antipasto dishes from the 1950s. I love them, and I only put cool things in them. You know, it's really fun. I like looking at them. I like thinking about the stroll through the flea market. I tend to be a junker myself, and so blah blah blah.
Yeah,
and it's
you
not the
know.
Fancy. It's not necessarily the fanciest or the most expensive. It's more like the one you like, the one you're going to be using.
All right, time to start prowling the Goodwill.
And think about it. You know, you don't have to keep everything. I like to throw things away myself, but think about, you know, time and place, headspace, all those kind of things that were important to you. And that's when I buy a platter. Mm-hmm. Like, this was a great trip. I want to keep safe from there, so I buy a platter. And almost always it's ethnic related, right? So I try not to buy white.
Right. You want something with a design or something from the place.
Yeah, exactly. Enough about China. Let's jump into the Baker's Corner with Chef Brittany Bartleben from the Dahlia Bakery. Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. Time for the Baker's Corner here. I just wanted to thank Sam, who's missing from high school today. Is that you, Sam? Sam, as you know, earlier, if you were listening to the whole show, we did a little segment on chicken. And Sam, it's written here, you're missing your culinary class today where you were going to work on chicken.
Oh, perfect.
Right. And I didn't even talk to Kathy about the programming for your class. So she's a teacher, so she's got her eyes on you.
I like this. My mom used to call these mental health days, when you're really just taking care of yourself.
Anyway, thank you, Sam, for making us more important than high school today. We appreciate that. And then get back to class.
And Tom, in reference to butchering chicken, if you want to learn how to butcher a chicken, you guys have a knife skill class here on January 28th. So if you're interested in knowing how to butcher a chicken, all of you who didn't raise your hand when I asked who's going to do this, this is a good time to sign up for a class right here. January 28th, they're doing a class on how to use your knives, but to sharpen your knife, but also using chicken. So that's a perfect time.
And Sam, I'll say one more thing to Sam. It's on a private note. Nobody else listened to this.
Okay? Everyone.
It's a private note. Mm-hmm. Sam, when I took home ec in high school, 27 girls and me. That's all I'm going to say about that.
They don't do home ec anymore.
I know they don't do it like that. But, yeah.
I think they caught on.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, that's just what I'll say, Sam. Just wink, wink. Just you and I, okay?
Wink, wink.
All right, Brittany Bartleben, pastry chef of the Dahlia Bakery. We're going to talk cheesecake today and cheese in general and desserts, right? Just cheese.
My favorite
love
food.
So Terry made for Katie's cheesy dinner party where we invited all the furloughed workers from the federal government and our restaurants. Terry, what did you make for dessert?
I made a puff pastry stuffed with a camembert from Port Townsend and then melt the whole thing down and then make a compote on the side of apple and plum. So I would serve that on the bottom of the puff pastry and...
That's so as a pastry chef, what would you say about that?
I would say that's beautiful.
Oh, drizzled with honey on
top. Yes, I love it. I absolutely love it. I love cheese for dessert. I love using cheese as a garnish for a nice dessert, which you don't see all that often.
Right.
But I think it's one of the world's best ingredients.
Now, my grandfather, in the basement fridge, would keep a crock of pork cheese. You know what pork cheese is? It used to come in a crock, and it was kind of like purple cheese mixed with cheddar cheese, and it was spoonable. Mm-hmm. Not pourable, but he would take a spoon of that cheese out of the crock and put it on top of his apple pie.
Oh,
and
that
was
sounds heavenly.
Very much a tradition for him.
Yeah.
Very stinky little cheese, too.
Well, it would sit in there for years.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't come over that often.
In the Lyon area in France, they use they make a cheese. It's a spoonable item.
But it's spoonable, but it's not like a poisse with a, you know, where it,
so
it drips.
I'm talking about something of that nature, like a poisse, where they put all the leftovers of any cheese, you put it in there in that crock, and it's got brandy in it, grappa or mar. And man, you put this stuff in there for a few months, and then you take that with a spoon and you take it out. Watch out. Even the flies go away. It's pretty stinky.
Any cheese, including the rind?
Yeah, especially the rind cheese.
Wow, that is intense.
Especially the rind, especially all that cheese. And they put all the leftovers in there, and then you spoon it and move it around from time to time, and it brines in that Mar de Bourgogne or something. Oh, man, when you take this and you take a beautiful piece of country bread toasted and you spoon that stuff on top, watch out.
Yeah, watch out.
That stuff smells
sounds pretty
like,
funky.
And
yeah.
you can walk
very
away.
Funky, but it's delicious.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
come
actually
on, come
good.
On, come on, chef.
No, the
it's
cheese.
It's delicious?
Well, it's like a creamy.
Come on. Are you just saying because it's French it's good?
No, it's not delicious. You're right.
Okay.
It's different.
Well, because Limburger, right, taste. Roquefort is delicious.
Right.
It's got that stinky smell, but it's actually delicious.
Correct.
And
so is Epoisse.
And Mont d'Or, that's the one that...
Mont d'Or, it's delicious. Wait, let's talk about, though, we've got Brittany here. I want to use her know-how. And I think the most common cheese dessert that we think of here in the States is cheesecake.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I have a question about that. I'm not, obviously, cheesecake. I didn't grow up with cheesecake. Mm-hmm. It's called cheesecake. How much cheese is actually in there, and what kind of cheese
it's
is actually in there?
It's cream cheese.
Yeah, which is not... I mean, it's kind of a...
Are you blasting Philadelphia
No, I'm not blasting anybody. I'm just
if
trying to see...
If you have something to say about Philly cream cheese, I would like you outside, sir.
Come on, dude.
Well, that was quick.
Like we're going to have another...
You're telling me we should have a mirepoix of cheese and brandy over a few months and then blast
that would be good in your cheesecake.
Anyway, let's answer the question.
To answer your question, yes, it is typically cream cheese, but what I love to do with cheesecake is take that ratio and maybe cut it with a little bit of goat cheese or ricotta or... sheep's milk cheese, fromage blanc, and that just really makes it extra special.
It makes it
a little tangier. It's less sweet. And that's you still get that creamy, dense cheesecakiness.
But
that
a bit more cheesy.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
Can you go further? Have you tried going to like Goudas, and either an aged Gouda or just a Gouda or an Edam or a little bit firmer cheese?
I have not, but I don't see why you couldn't if you puree the bejesus out of it in your food processor. You can... usually take any of those more firm cheese and get them creamy. I mean, think of a cheese ball, which I make every year for Christmas. It's cream cheese and then whatever other. I did Gruyere this year and cheddar, and it eventually becomes creamy, and then you can add sour cream and eggs, and it will bake into a cake.
Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Kate.
Any hot tips when you're making the cheesecake? I think everyone gets a little bit nervous. There's a springform pan involved. There's the
just relax,
of the
everyone. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Is that bake what it is? Slow and low in a water bath. It could take a really long time, but it will happen. If you get a little crack, it's kind of like the pumpkin pie we talked about. That's what the sour cream topping is for.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's
what your toppings fresh fruit
are for.
Or something. Yeah.
That's
right,
what the whipped cream is
that's
for. What,
exactly.
Why would it crack?
Sometimes if the temperature is too high or if there's not enough water in your water bath, that the cheese just sort of wants to go somewhere and cracks. Gets
See,
a little dry.
It cooks a little bit faster in one pot than the other.
Yeah.
That's also the other reason. So one pot is cooked, the other one is not, so it doesn't...
Yeah.
Stay together, it separates.
If you want to not mess around with the springform pan, you can always bake a cheesecake in a tart shell. It's going to be much more shallow. You still want to do it at a really low temperature, but it'll be done in a half hour, and you don't have to worry about the water bath.
And then just have an extra slice.
Yes.
I don't think of springform pans being waterproof in that way.
It's not.
So what do? Do you line it with
foil? You wrap the entire pan after you've poured your cheesecake base in. You wrap the entire outer edge of the pan in foil to protect it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's.
Could you do it in a Pyrex pan, like a glass pan?
You can, and the reason we use the springform pan is because the outer
to unmold.
Yeah, to unmold exactly.
Yeah, right.
But if you want to make your cheesecake ahead of time and you don't want to use a springform pan, you can bake it and then freeze it solid and then invert it out of the pan. Which,
or you can serve it in the Pyrex.
Or you can serve it in the Pyrex.
Yeah, serve it in the Pyrex. Yeah.
That's what my mom always did.
Yeah, we don't have to be precious about it. We're eating cheesecake.
Yeah, exactly.
Another cheesy kind of dessert that I certainly, not even really a dessert, you could have it for breakfast if you're lucky, but a cheese Danish.
Mm.
How difficult is that to accomplish?
It's no harder than any other Danish. It's if you've got a good Danish recipe that you're happy with, it's just a matter of mixing some cream cheese with some sugar and plopping it on top.
So the Danish being a laminated dough kind of recipe?
Correct.
So a laminated dough is what?
It's when it's sheeted several times, like puff pastry, and folded. So you're creating those layers.
Layers of.
And I know croissants, say, can be... A buttery croissant is about 65% butter, right? In a laminated, like, Danish dough, are we looking at the same thing?
Slightly less pinch of cardamom
now,
is traditional.
If I was feeling a little bit lazy and I didn't want to make my own laminated dough, have you purchased... I mean, you have such easy access to these things, but I think our listeners would love to know where to pick some up if they didn't want to make it.
I've never seen a frozen or a store-bought Danish dough.
We've seen puff pastry.
Puff pastry. You see that everywhere.
Can you get away with that?
Pastry.
Sure. Yeah, it's going to be a little more buttery than Danish, but you can easily pull off a... Call it a Danish and not really anybody's.
And no one will argue with you.
No one's going to be mad at you for presenting them puff pastry. Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, those are delicious too.
Yes.
Any other cheese thoughts? I mean, what about, well, this is probably not a pastry
question.
Just
eat more cheese, make it room temp, take it out.
Apparently,
of the
there's 1.4 billion pounds of extra cheese out
there. It's American cheese, right?
Yes.
I wouldn't put American cheese in a dessert. That's just me. I'm not knocking American cheese, but...
No, I don't know that it's American cheese as in Kraft Singles.
Kraft Singles? Oh, okay.
I think it's American
cheddar.
Cheddar.
Blocks of cheddar.
Love cheddar.
Yeah. What about a pastry crust? What about doing a cheese crust for an apple pie?
We've done that before, and it's good. And it's particularly if you're from the Midwest, where I think that's more common.
So do you make like a pot brisé and then
shred a little cheese in there? White cheddar gets really good flavor.
And if you have extra dough, you roll those like little cigarettes
and make
some little cheese.
Homemade Cheez-Its.
Exactly. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, this has been enlightening.
Yeah.
Even though you're both kind of cheesy.
I was hoping there'd be something out of you. Sort of pun.
I was just going to come up with another one, but I can't say it on the air.
Okay, let's not do that then.
Up next, we have food for thought, tasty trivia. I don't know if you're sticking around for this.
I'm happy to stick around.
Oh,
yeah,
we got
a
competitor.
I'm tired of losing.
All right, Brittany's going to join us for food for thought, tasty trivia. Up next on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Time for Food for Thought, tasty trivia in the Seattle kitchen. Coming to you right here from the Hot Stove Society. KDO is going to administer our test today. But we're going to play for a young man who skipped school today.
That's right. We're going to play for Sam. Big deal. Got out of school.
Instead of butchery class.
Don't tell everybody. His teacher is going to know.
Oh, and Sam's mom. Maybe Sam, you have to share it with your mom. I don't know.
We'll see. Seems like it's iffy.
Or you could walk home. Your choice.
All right. So the way we play this game, you're each going to receive five questions. Brittany Bartoleben has decided to stay, thank goodness, because I keep on losing. Was pretty sick of that.
She was going to get fired from Molly Moon for giving away so much
And you know
cream.
What? It's the beginning of 2019. I cannot kick off the year unemployed. So each of you are going to receive five questions. Whoever gets the most correct wins. Whoever gets the least amount correct is the big loser for the day. And the loser has to pony up a gift for Sam, who skipped class to be here with us. So Tom,
and his mother, my mother would never let me skip class.
Well, your mom is clearly not
bad,
as fun as Sam's
she's
mom.
She's a bad mom.
All right, Tom, what are you going to give away to Sam if you lose?
I'm going to give Sam a choice of any regular cooking class here at the Hot Stove Society that he can bring his mom to. Two of them. It's $170 value or $180, something like that, for two people. And so, Sam, any class you like except for the expensive ones.
Luckily, private
class.
No, we
do have special classes sometimes. So it's one of our normal classes, Masa Masters or Knife Skills or New York Steaks.
Ooh, that's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. Okay, Thierry, if you lose, what will you give to Sam and his mom?
Have you been to Luc au Loulet?
No, not
yet. All right, so we'll bring you to brunch at Luc on Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah. Brittany?
I will do a $50 gift card to the Dahlia Bakery and a signed copy of our cookbook.
Yay!
Dahlia Bakery cookbook.
Also nice. Gifts aplenty. Terry Rotrow, you traditionally like to go first in this quiz.
True, I'll stop.
Let's do this. Your first question. Which of the following vegetables is not one of the ingredients in the famous V8 juice? Do you know that juice, Terry?
I've heard of it.
Okay. At least you've seen it.
I don't normally drink it for...
I know. I just want to make sure that you at least know what we're playing with here.
I believe the base is tomato.
You're on to a great start. So which of these is not one of the All eight right. special vegetables? Is it beet, carrot, spinach, or cabbage?
I'm going to say cabbage.
That is correct. Good job, sir.
Woohoo!
Your second question.
I had a choice between four of them.
All right, next. Your second question. What is the main ingredient in Vichyssoise? Not even going to give you multiple choice.
That's going to be very, very hard.
Though. Oh, you stop it. Don't play coy with me.
I think potatoes would be one.
That is the answer we're looking for. Correct, potatoes. Your third question, what country produces the most potatoes? Speaking of potatoes, is it China, the U.S., Ireland, or Russia?
I'm going to go with the United States of America.
Oh, you'd be incorrect. Oh. Although I love your country pride. It's actually China. China leads in potato production.
You know, this is becoming too much of a story here. Every time, China leads.
China's doing a lot
Nothing
of good
wrong
stuff
with that.
Over there.
No,
good
but
country, nice people.
I should
nice,
have known that.
Nice country, nice people, good food. Big fan. All right, Terry, your fourth question. What soft drink company introduced the brand Slice? Are you familiar with the brand Slice? It's an orange drink. Was it introduced by Dr. Pepper, Coca-Cola, 7-Up, or PepsiCo?
I'm going to go with, it's an orange color? Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with...
It's an orange soft drink.
Orange soft drink.
Called Slice.
I'm going to go with 7-Up.
It's actually Coca-Cola, the Coca-Cola company.
That makes sense.
Terry, your last question. According to a 1980s beverage media poll, hope you've been researching your 1980s beverage media polls lately.
Does it wear Bell's Bottom?
Of 400 bartenders, what is the average male customer's favorite drink? Think about it. 80s. It's a crazy time. Here are your options. Was it beer, bourbon, scotch, or vodka? What was that 80s?
Vodka.
Very confident. Unfortunately, it was beer. Beer is what we were looking
very confident,
for.
Very wrong.
Very wrong. And very wrong.
You know, Terry, those were some hard questions. We kind of warmed you up with some easy ones, and it got more difficult. Two out of five.
I got to go back and learn my syrups. Good luck, buddy.
Brittany Bartoleben, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Just reviewing your questions here. Your first. Which grade of olive oil is considered the best? Extra virgin, pure virgin, or super fine virgin?
Extra virgin.
Extra virgin is correct.
I didn't even know they had a super
fine. Super fine virgin.
Super fine.
I know. That's a really fun idea, though. Okay, your next question. What vegetable has varieties known as bell tower, Orabel, and Jupiter?
I'm going to say...
Oh, do you want me to give you some options? Do you feel confident? How confident?
Kind of confident. I was going to say pepper. Peppers?
That is correct.
No way.
You're very confident and very correct. Very nice.
That's a very nice attempt.
I like that. I like the way that you kind of tiptoed.
I like how you just said it very slowly and came into it.
All right, Brittany, you're doing great. Here's your third question. In the drink called a zombie, those drinks that you have every weekend.
All the time.
You're
yeah.
always
mm-hmm.
drinking zombies. Mm-hmm. What is the main alcoholic ingredient? Is it beer, brandy, rum, or whiskey?
Rum.
That is correct.
Really?
Very nice.
Yeah.
If I recall correctly, the zombie is a tiki drink, so rum makes a lot
of
sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So says
Good
I
call.
As I think about this. Brittany, your next question. Of the following dishes, which are not typically made with some kind of seafood? Is it bouillabaisse, ossobuco, frito misto, or tempura?
Ossobuco.
Ossobuco is correct. Very nice. Your last question. Which of the following ingredients are not used in a Bloody Mary according to the Playboy Bar Guide? Is it ketchup, sugar, Tabasco sauce, or Worcestershire sauce?
Ketchup.
Sugar.
Sugar. It's actually sugar. Sugar is what we're looking for. But still a very
Thank
nice
you.
Showing.
Yeah.
I still
beat Terry.
Really? You really took Siri to task there.
Dang.
Tom, you're up. Which of the following compounds have not been approved for use in the U.S. as an artificial sweetener? Acyl Flame K.
Absolutely.
Is it acetaminophen? Is it aspartame or is it saccharin? Which one?
It's not approved. I think saccharin's been banned, so I don't know. I'll say saccharin.
It's actually acetaminophen. Acetaminophen. Tom, the original Bellini was a mixture of sparkling Italian white wine and what type of fruit?
Peach.
That is correct. Very nice. The sandwich known as the Reuben does not have which of the following ingredients? Boiled ham, corned beef, sauerkraut, or Swiss cheese?
What was the first one?
Boiled ham.
Boiled ham.
That'd be the Cuban, not the Reuben.
Very nice. Boiled ham is not a part of that sandwich. Marzipan is made of what kind
Almonds.
Of nut? That is correct. In the United States, about how much beer does the average person drink
18,000
gallons.
How
dare you? Let me give you some options. I can't do conversions. 24 pints, 24 quarts, or 24 gallons?
The average American drinks... 24 gallons of beer a year.
That is correct.
Oh, my God. No way.
Tom, this means you got 4 out of 5 correct. That means you tie Brittany, but that still means that Thierry Rotrou.
That means Sam and his
lost.
Mom are coming to brunch at Luke.
Congratulations, Sam. Thanks for cutting class today. And if you want to be part of the show, you can send us a notebook on Facebook or Twitter, Seattle Kitchen. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. The show is ably produced by Large Media. And that's L-A-R-J Media. Our lead producer is Sarah Leibovitz, and our sound engineer is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. If you want to be part of our studio audience, go to hotstovesociety.com and buy tickets for only $15. They come with a fantastic breakfast sandwich and hot coffee. And remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can subscribe to our podcast through Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or download the Cairo Radio app and search for Seattle Kitchen.
Thanks for listening.
Have a great weekend.